Company, and today we're speaking with Chris Kocek on Dialogue, who's got a lot of different things going on. Hi, Chris. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Very well. It's so nice that we're both in Austin. Chris and I met through a contact at GSD&M here in town, and he's been involved with TEDx Youth in Austin, and he's also got a book coming out and launched a new company. So I was just thrilled that he was interested in speaking with me on Dialogue. He's a strategic planner in Austin, Texas, and he recently launched his company Gallant here in town. And before that, he was at GSD&M in Austin, Texas, and it also looks like you have some New York experience with BBDO as a senior behavioral planner. I'm, of course, looking here on your LinkedIn profile. Anything else that you'd like to share with the folks listening?
No, that's a pretty straightforward look at it. I think another thing that did help was my entrance into planning was I taught English as a second language for a while, and I think that influenced a lot of how I look at the world because it also then encouraged me to go live in Mexico for a while to study Spanish, and I think learning different languages is a great asset when it comes to the world of planning.
That's wonderful, and that really goes into the next bucket of what I wanted to mention to folks. When we post this dialogue on the blog, you'll see another link, which is the TEDx Youth Austin piece that you did, and that was titled How to See the World with a Fresh Set of Eyes. So Chris has posted via YouTube link that presentation. Chris, tell us a little bit about that, because you've touched on perspective, and that piece with TEDx was totally about having perspective and just looking at the world, you know, literally from the title, what it says, with a fresh set of eyes. Tell us a little bit about that presentation and sort of some key points, perhaps, that folks that are listening today as they watch it, either, you know, during this interview or after it, what they can look forward to seeing and learning from the presentation.
Yeah, well, the TEDx talk was actually really just a thinly veiled set of planning techniques when you really stop and think about it. This whole idea of seeing the world with a fresh set of eyes is something that is critical to people who work in advertising, and it's especially important for planners, because we have to be able to take things that are commodities and make them seem fresh and new and interesting. A lot of times brands will come to advertising agencies asking, you know, help us reposition our brand, or, you know, we don't feel like we're as relevant today as we were 10 years ago to customers out there. How can we become relevant to them again? And so we have to be able to, as planners, you know, help that brand seem fresh and new, and therefore we have to be able to see things in a fresh, new, and original way ourselves. So some of the techniques, as you mentioned, one of them is learn as many languages as you can. That's definitely one of them. And in the talk, I talk about how the rooster says different things in different languages, and how that was a real sort of epiphany for me when I was living in Mexico. Mm-hmm. Also, walk a mile in someone else's shoes. That's really just a veiled form of ethnography. So obviously when we do ethnographies as planners, or if we work with a cultural ethnographer, you know, it's really about spending time with those people and walking a mile or 5 miles in somebody else's shoes. Another point in the talk at TEDx was asking questions no one else is asking. And I think that's probably one of the biggest techniques for planners, is trying to get to insightful questions that will lead to insightful results.
Mm-hmm. Very clear. I love the piece. I love all of it, but I certainly love the walk in their shoes. Well, and I encourage folks, if you haven't already seen the presentation, to go ahead and click on that link. How long is it, Chris, just to give folks an idea about the time expectation there?
That's about 15 minutes.
So if you got about 15 minutes, perhaps a lunch break, yeah, take a look at that. It really is worth the time. And I wanted to jump into about your book and then about your company that you launched, and we'll get into some specific questions here in a second. But you recently put together a book, and it's going to be out in June, everyone. So on Amazon, be on the lookout for Chris's book. It's called The Practical Pocket Guide to Account Planning. And Chris shared with me a draft, and I've been through the book. I've looked through it. I absolutely love it. I've read it, and I've taken some notes here to share with you all and to ask Chris some specific questions. Chris, tell us just a brief overview of the book, and then we'll jump into questions. I want to mention your company, too, and give a plug for that before we get in. But anything to say up front about your book, The Practical Pocket Guide to Account Planning?
Well, it's really just, you know, when I was in grad school, I read the Truth Lies in Advertising by John Steele. And the talk of, you know, the art of account planning. And that book, it was very helpful for me, and I'm sure many students, in terms of understanding why account planning is necessary, how strategy can help an agency and their respective clients. But one of the things that I felt like this book could do a little bit better, perhaps, was to really give people an on-the-ground perspective of what you're going to be doing on a daily basis with account planning. So it's just a really straightforward, no-nonsense approach to the discipline of planning. And that's really what I wanted it to be, so that when you get out of school, you know exactly what you're going to be doing.
Yeah, I think it's wonderful that. I think it connects a lot of dots. As I read through the book, I thought, wow, I haven't seen anything like this. And I also think it would be a great tool for recent graduates, not only as a read and to supplement any lessons learned and just specifics within, you know, a master's program or even an undergrad program, but to fill in those blanks and to give that storyline of sort of the 1, 2, 3 and where things come from and how they go, especially within the construct, you know, that you use on concept statements. I really thought that was a big sort of time saver for folks who may not necessarily learn how to construct those or what they look like or the purpose of those. So the title is spot on as far as a practical pocket guide to account planning. And then lastly, just as up and up front here, I want to talk a little bit about your company because I want to make sure we mention it before we get into some of these more specific questions. Chris, recently, when I say recently, I think it's been about a month. Is that right? Your company, Gallant, has it been about a month since you've launched?
Yeah, a little over a month. We launched at South by Southwest.
Excellent. Well, tell us a little bit about your company, if you don't mind, and then we'll get into some of those key questions on your book.
Gallant is really, you know, it's a strategy and design studio here in Austin, and our focus is on helping mission-driven or purpose-based brands succeed in their efforts to help build a better world. And a lot of times people ask me, well, what do you mean by better world? And I break it out like this to say, you know, a healthier, cleaner, smarter, stronger, safer, all-around better world. I think those are things that we would all love to see more of. And the reason that I decided to start Gallant was because, you know, coming from an advertising background, doing strategy every day, a lot of times what I felt like I found was a lot of insights about customer behavior or insights that actually related to the business model that we'd be working with certain brands. And one of the challenges of advertising, which I talk about a little bit in the book, is that sometimes advertising agencies are a little bit further downstream. So big decisions around how the product is made or how the service model is going to be taken care of, those kinds of things are determined, you know, at client headquarters, and the ad agency may or may not be a part of that decision-making process. We may not have a voice in being able to say, oh, actually, based on our research, we would recommend doing the service this way or designing the product with this or this feature. And so we kind of act more like the release valve for all those products sitting in inventory somewhere. And with Gallant, you know, our focus is really on strategy and design. We do advertising, but that's like the last thing that we would recommend doing. We want to help brands grow their brand from the inside out and really get the core super strong so that the brand, kind of the reputation of the brand, precedes itself so that people are talking about it and that it's spreading organically and naturally. So that's one of the big differences between what Gallant is when compared to, you know, a more traditional advertising agency. And then the other big difference, of course, too, is that we really want to make a positive dent in the universe. So kind of pulling from Steve Jobs' idea of making a dent in the universe, we really want to make a positive dent in the universe and work with startups, small businesses, and brands that are trying to do good in the world and make a better world.
Mm-hmm. Very clear, very clear. I think there's a really strong PR piece to this in the goodness, in the you know, smart solutions, in the sort of reputation piece that you mentioned. Anything to extend on there, or am I going on a wrong path if you're more upstream?
Oh, no, you're absolutely right. It's obviously PR is a big thing. Word of mouth is just becoming bigger and bigger every day. There's a great book out there called The Intention Economy, which looks at, you know, basically the sort of major shift that's going on now where, you know, people are becoming more and more the medium of the message. And so if you can, you know, leverage that word of mouth, organic buzz that's going on in the world, you know, the more effective you'll be. And that's why Gallant, at the end of the day, is really more of a branding studio, a strategy and design branding studio, because branding is so much bigger than advertising. It's so much bigger than any one piece of communication. It's all these different experiences, all these different touch points that people come across. And so, you know, if you ever, you know, don't have a good experience at one touch point, that tarnishes your brand, whereas every experience that you have is a positive one that further proves the value of the brand and makes the brand true to its core purpose. So I think you're right on.
Thank goodness we're getting back to the consumer focus, because I think for a while different messages, with media being all the hype and just digital media at that, you read all about different things coming up that are bringing it back to the consumer, like that why factor. A lot of people are talking about the why factor, and we are nothing if we are not linked to the consumer and the consumer benefit as planners. And I'm just so thrilled that that we're getting back to that as an industry. I think the intention or the, you know, benefit of social media is no benefit at all if it's not linked back to what consumers want, what linked, of course, back to behavior and in that regard as well. Well, I want to jump into these key questions, because I got some specifics after reading the share on the book that you sent me. And we talked a little bit about the spark, if you will, for writing the book. But is there anything to extend on in terms of, you know, when you went to write the book, was there a spark, and what was that? Would you share with us how the idea to write the book came about? Anything to extend on there?
Yeah, absolutely. There are actually a few different sparks. As you can imagine, no project really comes from one place alone. So there are actually a few different sparks. And the first one was when I started working as an account planner at BBDO New York several years ago, I noticed there was a pretty big difference between what I'd learned in grad school versus what I was being asked to do on the job every day. And I think that was a big thing. And when I talked to other account planners over the years about my experience, I actually heard a lot of similar stories. I heard a lot of planners say that, you know, the first 2 years were kind of a blur, and that they were mostly just trying to figure out what the heck was going on, because you get thrown into the, you know, these situations, and people ask you these questions all the time, and you're supposed to have the answers, and so you're constantly, you know, sort of treading water and trying to keep up with what's going on, but you usually find a way. That was the first spark, was to help people understand, you know, what's going to be happening those first couple of years. The second spark was the fact that many of my colleagues in account management and the creative department as well, they're mostly junior creatives or assistant account executives, but many of them seem to have little or no experience working with account planners. And so they seem to have very different assumptions about what account planners were supposed to do. And I remember at one point, just as a fun experiment for myself, I once decided to ask about, you know, a dozen or so of my colleagues what they thought account planners did, and I ended up getting about a dozen different answers. I got everything from, you guys write the creative briefs, to you're the insight experts, and I even got some people just shrug their shoulders, which was pretty funny. And then the final spark, as I mentioned in the beginning of the book, was when I went to dinner with some of our home improvement clients earlier in my career, and we ended up playing this game, which was, what kind of tool are you? And everyone else on the team had a tool equivalent. So, you know, we had an account director, and he was thought of as like a hedge trimmer and things like that. But when they got to me, they didn't really know what to compare me to. And they said I was the equivalent of a complicated but somewhat intimidating 19th century tool that looked really impressive, but that left them wondering what exactly to do with it and how to use it. So I guess you could say at the end of the day, I wrote the book so that people would know how to use me.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. And I love the inconsistency being consistent. I think it's just totally reflective of the, you know, difference of planning between agency to agency, planner to planner, and then client to client. You've got a matrix there already in just those things. So for anyone who's interested just early on, or I'd say even to a mid-level, to get that perspective of a well-rounded view of what you might be exposed to, and even those connected pieces where things connect, because you don't necessarily in an advertising agency get to see all the time where it's connected to marketing. Who do you think will find the most value from reading it?
Well, I think that advertising students for sure, interns and definitely new account planners will get the most out of it. But you know, I also shared a copy of it with Justin Graham out at Yoga 5 in Australia. He's the chief strategy officer out there. And he said it was just as useful for those who've been around the block a few times.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Even though I wrote it primarily for new and aspiring account planners, the general take that I've gotten from people, including even Nancy Hill from the 4As, you know, she also said that it was a great tool for anyone looking into advertising in general as a career. So I was really honored by that. So I actually think it would be useful for anyone in the industry because the ideas and the techniques that are in the book can actually be used by anyone, whether you're an account planner or an account manager or a creative. You can use those techniques to get better insights and drive to great strategies. So, and ultimately, I think that if more people understand what planners are capable of and what great planning can do, then hopefully more planners will get used in the right way and we'll start to see a lot more interesting and insightful campaigns out there.
Absolutely. So I think the guidelines and sort of it's a standard. It's giving standards. And I've been talking recently about, you know, if your rules are changing, you're probably following the wrong rules. And I think the book does a very good job of setting out those standards or just the practical pieces of planning. We've got a page number on this next one, so it might be around page 8. but on page 8, you talk a little bit about traditional planners and user experience and how that might sort of cross-pollinate in the future. Traditional planners will cross with UX planners, and share your point of view for us, if you will, on planning's value as a discipline within the digital and or user experience world that we live in today. What stays the same? What do you think has changed? And then into the future, what do you think that the future holds for planners in a digital world?
That's a great question. It's a big one, and
yeah.
There's actually, as I'm sure you know, a lot of debate going on in the industry right now about the role of planning and how it needs to change to fit our, you know, more digitally centric world that we're getting into every day. And as you mentioned, you know, some people think the role of planning is still about uncovering poignant human truths and developing an insightful strategic idea, and that's certainly where planning has been for, you know, since its inception. But other people now, with all these, you know, new digital touch points and social touch points and user experience, well, others believe that planning really needs to be much more wrapped up in that whole user experience process and that, you know, evolving list of digital touch points. Now, I personally tend to skew more toward the first camp, who thinks that it's about, you know, still about human truths and developing an insightful strategic idea. Because I think that if you don't have a big idea at the center of your campaign or the center of your brand, then all you've got are a bunch of touch points. And same thing with, you know, web development as well. If you don't have a core idea or a core understanding of the people who are coming to your website or to these different touch points, then you're not really going to have something that is emotionally engaging for them. I think that the core discipline of planning is about understanding how people think and what motivates them. And it's critical, that discipline is critical to understanding digital behaviors and developing that engaging user experience. Now, I think that knowing all those different digital touch points and how people use them, I think that adds more work to the planner's plate to understand everything like that. But I do think that it's just part of the job these days. Ultimately, I think planners are responsible for understanding the customer's path to purchase. And those digital touch points are now a core part of that path to purchase. And, you know, compared to 10 or 20 years ago, digital changes the path dramatically. But I do think that the core discipline of planning is still the same.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. And anything to add on the future? Any heads up or any other things that are on your radar in terms of what the future holds for planners in the digital world?
Oh gosh, I mean, I just think that, you know, there's new stuff coming out all the time. I think it'll obviously be important to understand what's going on with semantic search.
Mm-hmm.
And how, I think it's also called Web 3.0, I'm not sure what number they're on yet. But semantic search, I think, is going to change things a lot in terms of, you know, the interface between customers and brands. So that that's probably one of the biggest things right now. And of course, social will continue to evolve. I mean, right now you see Vine as the new darling child in the social space. Sort of like 6 seconds of video, and it's for like the Twitter generation, right? Like a YouTube video is now too long, equivalent of 140 characters, but in video form. So 6 seconds of video to get your message across, and I think brands are still trying to figure out how to use it well. So there's probably an opportunity there for planners and creatives to collaborate on how best to use that. But the tools will always change. We're going to keep seeing new tools coming out all the time. But if you have a firm grasp on the basics and an appreciation for psychology and what motivates people, then I think that you'll always be able to adapt those skills to whatever tools come out.
Yeah, absolutely. Well stated. I'm going to jump a little bit here because I want to be cognizant and respectful of your time. We spoke a little bit, and I sent the email questions to Chris like I do with all of the dialogue victims. And I want to talk a little bit about that consumer segment question with personas, because I think we're on the other side of heavy persona usage, but I do still come across it. And the question is just about, you know, seeing the rise of personas and a lot of good use and also a lot of bad use. And the good usage always links back to that consumer piece, you know, knowledge gained during research or during some sort of otherwise substantiated fact and insight dive. If you would, share with us your process for integrating research within developing personas. And for everyone listening, personas and consumer segments are a piece of the book. It might be around page 95. And Chris, if you would share with us your process for integrating and developing personas, sort of the what works well and also the what doesn't work well, if you would.
Yeah. Well, in my process, I typically almost always start with a firm understanding of what's going on in the culture of the category and things like that. And so a lot of secondary research, you know, will happen in the upfront. But I think that the kind of research that works really well for developing personas is usually qualitative in nature to begin with. Things like in-depth interviews, focus groups, customer intercepts, store walks, and really a lot of personal observation. I think if you can get access to client data on website usage or social networking habits and things like that, I think that can obviously help immensely as well. But unfortunately, a lot of clients either don't have that data or they don't have access to it because they may be in a silo themselves within their organization. So, for example, the marketing group may be cut off from the analytics group or from the data group. Which I know sounds crazy, but even in this day and age, there are still, pretty big walls between departments on the client side, and so you can't always get that data. The kind of research that I find to be less helpful for developing personas are the giant aggregator reports that give you just really broad brushstrokes about consumers in the category, things like 95% of these consumers use social media. Mm-hmm. It's not all that helpful because ultimately I think that great personas function like, they're like colorful paintings. It's all the little details that make a persona more effective and meaningful for your creative team. And so you have to be able to pull out from qualitative primary research, information, little nuggets that will actually help the creatives latch on to certain behaviors or certain likes and dislikes and things like that.
Mm-hmm. I love that mention of the creative piece because it is. That's where I've seen it used the most effectively. And also for clients. I think it was when I was running the streets of New York looking for a job and just out of college, I think. I believe I went into Fallon, and they had a booth, sort of like a window display of Meet Johnny, the so-and-so consumer. And it was just really enlightening. It was experiential. It was sort of a day in the life, and you can walk into the booth and see, Johnny and see what he was up to and doing. And then, of course, they link that back to the brand and how he experienced it and to that path of purchase that you mentioned. So I think it's valuable for creatives and also for different marketing and advertising, the advertising team in general, to get that sort of visual and to get that experiential piece as they're creating different facets of a communication plan.
Well, I think that you hit the nail on the head with that phrase, a day in the life of. I think, right now the phrase or the word personas is really big and everybody's using it right now, and it certainly helps is developing these sort of fictitious or, you know, kind of nice and concise day in the life of timelines. And I think that those kinds of things, you know, help with understanding motivations. It helps with, you know, media placement. It helps with a lot of things. And so I think that while personas are kind of the new buzzword that everybody's using, I think that planners who've been in the business for a while have plenty of experience developing persona-like documents.
Yeah, that's great. That's really great. We're going from a place of real eclecticness into a place of going back to some of those tried and true things. I've been getting a lot of calls for usability, and while sometimes the you know, basic usability piece is all about the technology, when you link in and you do qual with the piece or with the technology, it is so wonderful to get companies that are interested in actually how consumers are using the technology and using market research to sort of plow forward from the insights gained from the research. As a last question, this is sort of a broad question. I always love speaking to entrepreneurs and people that are in a forward-thinking space, and you're definitely both of those things. And how would you recommend those listening in terms of getting a job as an account planner, how would you recommend they go about it?
Yeah, well, I mean, I can tell you my path into planning was basically I got lucky. When I was about to graduate from UT's advertising program, a family friend of mine was in New York and was having a conversation with Andrew Robertson, who's the CEO of BBDO Worldwide. And somehow in that conversation, my name came up. And apparently he said, have Chris send his resume and his cover letter over to me. And so I started sweating bullets, and I did it, and I threw out my old cover letter, and I put myself out there. I opened my cover letter to Mr. Robertson by saying, "Dear Mr. Robertson, here are three things you need to know about me. I believe in doing well by doing good. I wear my heart on my sleeve, and I believe in the power of ideas." And I guess one of those things actually piqued his interest, because he ended up scheduling interviews for me with John Osborne, who was the president of BBDO New York, Tracy Lovett, who was the director of the planning department at the time, and Troy Ruhannon, in account service. And ultimately, it was Tracy who said that she wanted to keep me for the planning department, and really that decision was what helped me get my foot in the door and really, you know, altered the course of my life in terms of getting into account planning and doing what I've been doing for the past however many years. For people who are trying to break into account planning today, I know a lot of people who have gotten their start in media planning or in account management, and I think that's a great way to learn other parts of the business, and I know that it's actually helped them incredibly when it comes to selling in different ideas and strategies, because they have a much broader understanding of how everything works within an agency, with clients. They have that multifaceted perspective on everything. Of course, my number one recommendation for people who want to get a job as an account planner is, as you can guess, read the book.
excellent, yes.
But seriously, I always tell students, like, I do a fair amount of guest lecturing at UT often, and I always tell students that the one character trait of planners everywhere is curiosity. I think you have to be insatiably curious to be in this business and to be a planner, to be a successful planner. You just have to love learning new things, because you're going to be asked questions about things all the time that you don't know anything about, and you're going to be the one to have to go find out about those things. So you have to love learning new things. So I would suggest, you know, learning everything you can about culture, about consumer psychology, about what motivates people to do what they do. And the other thing I would say is, you know, start keeping notes about your personal observations. You know, you'll notice a lot of planners are always carrying these little notebooks around, and at the end of the day, this business is about having a unique point of view. So I think if you are an aspiring planner, you should keep track of your thoughts and ideas and the things that you think are insightful or particularly interesting, because those thoughts and ideas are going to be the fodder that you use in your job interviews when you talk to people. And so that's really my advice. You know, be curious, be open, be passionate, and I think people will notice.
Wonderful. Well, thank you again, Chris, for your time today. But again, Chris's book is called The Practical Pocket Guide to Account Planning. It's going to be available in June on Amazon, and then it'll probably be available later, like on iTunes and different resources. We can continue to keep the blog updated as well, Chris, if you'd like to send me updates. I can keep folks abreast of what's going on and in touch with sort of the latest news, if you will, on the book. But just as a final word, thank you so much for your time and for your input.
Well, thanks for having me. I really appreciate you taking the time.
You're very welcome.